Our project is about crossing boundaries. The stories will talk about how people are struggling with their lives. The first interview is about Brian's brother. He's been asked his opinion about America's conflicts with other countries.
Hi, Steve. So how do you feel about war in general?
I don't like it at all.
Why?
Because it just, people shouldn't be killing other people. There should not be killing. There should not be, we're all one and the same, and we just should not be killing each other. I understand sometimes, you know, like the Revolutionary War and things like that, like America wouldn't be around today with war, without war, but I don't know. I can't get over the fact that people, you're killing other people. I don't like it. It's a terrible thing to me.
So what would be, in a world with no war, what would be the way people would settle disputes? Because war...
Debates.
But debates can turn into war at times.
We have war verbally. Like I said, I mean, war is kind of impossible to avoid because the way our world is, but I don't know. In a perfect world, to me, it just would never happen, but it's just not really possible, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, like, in your opinion, you don't think war is ever okay in any situation, no matter if it's, like, somebody terrorizes another country
and they fight back? I mean, for me, yes. It's not acceptable in any way, but at the same time, because of this world, I have to accept the fact that it's a huge possibility to happen because of what history has shown and, you know, what's happening today with, like, Iraq and Afghanistan and all that. I mean, even if you don't like war, you have to accept it.
Okay.
But what about Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and how
they took action upon us, so us taking action upon them, was that acceptable?
Yes, not as like a revenge type of thing. Not saying that America did that, but I think it was necessary because our plans were to stop Al-Qaeda, which, you know, would have done more bad things, or still doing bad things to this world today. But our goal by doing that makes it acceptable in a way to me because we were trying to stop Al-Qaeda from taking more lives.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, yes, we were trying to stop bad people.
So what do you think about our troops being in Afghanistan still?
I mean, I guess I'm on the fence with that. I mean, I understand we're over there trying to provide aid for them in many different ways. And it's a great thing that we're doing that. We're really trying to help that country. But, I mean, after so many years, I mean, you got to bring these people home to see their family, to, you know, many of them have kids. They haven't even met their kids yet, you know. They got to come home at some point to be with their families again where they belong. So, again, it's great that we're over there helping this country. It's a very nice thing that we're doing, but it's time to come home.
So that means that you're all for Obama's plan to bring the troops home by 2014?
Most definitely. I wish it could even be sooner, but, you know, if it has to be, you know, by 2014, as long as they get home, I support it.
That kind of gets into my next question was, so if Obama was to bring home the troops now rather than in 2014 when the plan is to teach the Afghanistan troops, like, better combat training, like, they're getting better combat training. So do you think if the U.S. brought home their troops now, would that cause a bigger threat to, like, terrorists in the U.S. again?
I mean, I think either way, I mean, no matter what we do, there's still always a threat to terrorist attacks and all that stuff. I mean, I think it's one of those things where, you know, we could try all we want to eliminate terrorist attacks and all, but, you know, no matter what we do, whether they happen again in a few years or a few decades from now, I mean, there's always going to be those bad people out there, unfortunately, but I don't think it really matters. It's just the amount of time of which another one will take place.
So, to sum that all up about Afghanistan, do you feel as though when the U.S. finally captured bin Laden, was that a relief for the U.S., or was that just like a time to celebrate?
Well, actually, when they... I was actually at the Phillies game the night they announced that they killed Osama bin Laden. And I remember everybody, all the fans, everybody was chanting USA, USA. And at first, I had no idea what was going on. And then very quickly, the word spread that we eliminated Osama bin Laden. And I don't know. It was very awkward for me. I guess the fact that, like, yeah, we got Osama bin Laden, a man that killed thousands of people and did terrible things to the U.S. and had terrible plans to, you know, do many other terrible things. But the fact that we were chanting and happy for a death, regardless of who it was, I think was what bothered me. I didn't actually partake in, like, cheering USA, USA, not because I'm not proud of my country, just because I don't know. No matter who it is, I don't want to be cheer for a death, if that makes any sense.
So, but, like, since he killed thousands of our, like, innocent civilians in New York at the World Trade Center, do you think, though, somewhere deep inside, you felt as though he deserved it?
Deserved to die?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm somebody that doesn't think anybody at any time has any say of whether or not another person should die, regardless of what they did or who they are or whatever. I'm more of somebody like this whole thing. I think instead of killing, people should be punished in a way, like sent to prison to rethink of what they've done. Not saying, you know, we can take thousands of people from and imprison them, but I'm on the fence with that just because, like, I just don't think anybody, no matter what their position is, what their power is, has a say whether or not another human living being has a right to live or not.
So from that, I take it that you've never considered joining the army, or have you?
No, me personally, no. I mean, I've thought about it, but my answer is still always no. But... you know, I know many kids actually now being in college that joined the Army with the ROTC program, which is actually, I really don't know exactly what it is, but I know you go into the Army, and I know the Army will help pay for college. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm not saying that's their reasoning for joining the Army, because I mean, that's a bad reason, you know, because you got to be prepared to do many things in the Army. But yeah, I know many people that actually are in the Army, you know, upon joining college and all, and it helps a lot with their education and stuff like that.
All right, so my final question is simply just, do you ever think, through the history of the United States, have they ever crossed boundaries with other countries' conflicts?
I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, we're not a perfect... I mean, I can't name specific events when mm-hmm. we have, because this isn't really my forte. But, I mean, I'm sure we have, without a doubt. I mean, yeah, we're America's supposedly, you know, quote-unquote, the greatest country in the world, you know, the most powerful, but that doesn't mean we make... every decision we make is the greatest decision, the best decision, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm sure, I mean, nobody's, you know, no country, no person, no leader, anything is perfect. So, yeah, we definitely have.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Steve. This was a great conversation, and I got to know a little bit more about your feelings. So, once again, thank you.
Next is Ashley's interview with her grandmother, who struggled growing up. She, an unfortunate child living in North Philly in the 40s, but now in 2013, she has everything she never had living in West Oak Lane.
This is the interview with my grandma, Louise Spells. What's the earliest memory you can remember of your childhood?
Well, I can go back as far as being 3 years old. And I was living at Alder and Gerard. And we had the old-fashioned potbelly stoves. It was in the living room. And my uncle came over, and he knocked the pipe on my leg. And I got a real bad burn from it. And then as time went on, we moved up from Gerard Avenue up to 10th and Jefferson, across from the Swartz Playground. That's when my two brothers and my sister, they used to take and tie a cat tail with a string and twirl them around until the cat get dizzy and let them go. Well, that was fun. Mm-hmm. Then we used to play hide and go seek. We had the big old, these sunflowers. Our sunflowers and is different from the stuff that they grow now. And we used to play in the yards, and we used to take the stem off and let them dry out and make the prettiest necklaces from the sunflowers. Then that was back in 1948, 49. By 1950, we moved up further, Columbia Avenue. I was living at 1015, and we used to scrub the floors on her knees. And back then, she made $7.50 a week. That was her pay. Well, things wasn't high back then. We could go to the movies for 10 cents. Hot dogs was 10 cents. And popcorn was 5 cents. We used to get these grab bags. And they was a penny. And you got so much in that penny grab bag. Well, we only had one TV. And that's my uncle. We called him Daddy and called his wife Mama, my mother's sister. Well, I called my mother Doc because my mother's sister raised us. And we used to go every Sunday. We was only allowed to watch TV only on a Sunday because he didn't want to burn out the tube. We had tubes then, big old tubes in the back of the TV. And Daddy didn't want to burn out the TV, so we would watch TV on Sundays and look at the Ed Sullivan Show. And that used to go off at 10 o'clock. And when that go off, we would all come downstairs, me, my mother, and my two brothers. Well, it was always us because my father died when I was 3 weeks old. So I really didn't get a chance to know him. My mother used to drink a lot. Well, the family then, they didn't go to clubs and bars back then. They just would drink amongst the family. And she would drink, and one Saturday morning or Saturday evening, she would sleep. And I was about 11 years old, 11 or 12, and we had a ledge. And this guy, I don't know, he was older, maybe about in his 20s or 30s then. And he had snuck in there, and he tried to grab me, but I ran and out the window, and it was a ledge. And I was beating on the people next door, but he wouldn't come out because I was on the ledge hollering for help, and I was drawing attention. So he flew out. Then as time moved on, when I was living at 1019, I used to go on to Wanock and Burke. That's mm-hmm. where I met my husband. So I used to pass by, and he looked up, and I don't know what it was, but it was something. And I went on home, and I changed clothes, and 5 minutes later, I walked past him again till he noticed me. Then he said, hi. And he said, where you live? And I told him, I said, I live around the corner. He was living at 11th and Montgomery, and I was living at 10th and Columbia. So that evening he came around. I was still playing with my dolls. I was only 11. Mm-hmm. And when I seen him coming, I threw the doll behind the door. And from that day forward, we just stayed on together. He wasn't nothing like he was fresh and nothing towards me. He would just take me to the movies on Saturdays. And on Sundays, we weren't allowed to go. We had to go to church. and be in church all day Sunday. We wasn't allowed to iron. You had to do all your clothes from Monday to Saturday. On Sunday, you wasn't allowed to do anything but go to church. No hair, no ironing, no nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Then we moved up to 11th and Columbia. And it was just me and my sister and my mom. And we still would walk down to Mama's house and them three blocks. And then at night after Ed Sullivan on a Sunday, we would walk back home. And we used to be so afraid because we were the only ones in the apartment. But nobody else, because we were underneath the storefronts. It was all storefronts then. That's how the apartments range.
What storefronts?
It was like a store that sold meats, like meat markets. Mm-hmm. They called them storefronts back then.
Okay.
So we stayed there maybe for about a couple of months until my mother could find a place. She found a place right around on Warnock Street. And that's when I had my first daughter, Charlene. I was 16. And then I had my second daughter, Darlene. I was 17. So I say, oh, well, I say, it's no use in me trying to go back to school. I say, I got to support these two babies of mine. So I got this job working at Gordon Davis Laundry, 11th and Columbia. Well, the wages was only $1.25 back then, but it was big money because my baby shoes was only 99 cents. A little outfit was 99 cents. Carnation milk was only 15 cents. The ride the bus was 22 cents.
Wow.
So after I had her and then I had her sister, then we moved. And we moved on 9th Street. That's when I had my son. And at 19, I had my son. So I was finished with children then. So I found a better job because then we moved from there and we moved up to 11th Street. And that's where I stayed there with my sister and her husband because she got married. She had two sons. And my brother, still those two, always was in trouble. And they always stayed in jail. So that's when I got married in 1971, and I moved away. And after I got married in April, my mother died on my husband's birthday, November the 21st, 1971. Mm-hmm. And my sister took and moved up to Indiana Avenue, and I moved up in West Oak Lane. And after I moved up in West Oak Lane, me and my husband, we got married. And I started off with this apartment. Well, it was only $100 a month rent in 71. Then it got too small for my three babies. So my aunt told me it was a house around the corner where I'm living right now in the presence. And we stayed here and we fixed it up, me and my husband. And after the rent man saw how nice we fixed it up, he decided that he had to sell it. Well, that was the hardship because then my husband started acting silly, very silly. And I was working and I was only bringing home maybe no more than about $80 or $90 with three babies. But God is good. And I took in, he was getting unemployment, and he lied and kept the checks hidden, and he would rent a car. You talk about hard times, they were hard times. So I was put up against the wall. I had $400 to my name. Out of that little bit of money, I saved $400 because I didn't have a choice. I had to buy the house. This was August. And I had to buy the house October. They gave me to October the 15th to make down payment and settlement. Mm-hmm. Well, we went to Stinton Avenue. All I had was the $400. No food, no nothing for my babies. Going into the wintertime. So I went to the meeting buy the house. So the guy from Washington, he came and we was all sitting around the table, the previous owners and me and my husband. So he say, Miss Spells, he says, you got to have $1,100. So I looked at him, well, the tears forming, because I know $1,100 was like $1 million.
My grandma wound up getting the house for $10,650.
My story.
It would blow your mind.
That's the key. They don't know.
My story.
Story.
Up next is Aaron's interview with his cousin Ying. She was from California. Her family had to move to Philadelphia because of the business. She struggled with being the oldest and having everybody depend on her.
Yano was born in Los Angeles, California at Miguel Hospital. Her parents moved here around the early 80s, and she is Chinese Vietnamese. At her preteens, she moved to Philadelphia at the age of 12.
That movie would be Dennis the Menace. I mean, we had the little crazy, you know, like, we didn't have much money. We play with whatever we can find. I mean, occasionally, you know, our parents do get us toys, but they're not like the expensive Mattel Barbie dolls or freaking, you know, basketball or anything like that. Because it's kind of like, you know, having four kids and them paying to support a house, a boat, a car. It's really, really expensive.
Then she talked about her childhood.
As a kid, whenever, you know, we finished doing our homework, like right after school, after we finished doing our homework, watching our favorite cartoons, mm-hmm. and getting a bite to eat, we'll do a little bit of chores around the house. My mom would give us like a dollar. If we're lucky, we'll get a dollar. If not, we'll get a quarter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll go play in the LA River. And as soon as the ice cream truck or the snow cone man or the corn man. Let me just clarify. The corn man is a guy that walks around with this cart and this little bike horn. He has actual corn in there. Mm-hmm. And when he comes over, he'll add, I think it was what, butter, Parmesan cheese, and paprika. That is like absolutely the best thing ever. It is awesome. And it's only 50 cents. But, you know, when those three people come around, you know, us kids, whatever we had in our pockets, we'll run up to them and we'll buy whatever we can. And then we'll lay on the in front yard. On the grass, and look up at the sky while we're eating ice cream, and hoping the ice cream doesn't fall on our face.
What her childhood means to her.
I had a more meaningful childhood. I understand the value of a dollar. Mm-hmm. I cherish the value of a dollar, not like most kids nowadays. I mean, back then I was super happy with a quarter. Nowadays, kids aren't even happy with a dollar, and they negotiate with you on a dollar. I mean, back then my mom. Yes, I mean, like, child abuse is wrong. Mm-hmm. But there's a borderline between abuse and teaching a kid a lesson. Mm-hmm. Okay? Some of these people, yes, they do go overboard. They do cause bleeding and bruises and all that stuff. But when we were kids, if we did something wrong, my dad would just, you know, he would have a feather duster. Oh, that thing hurt. If he didn't have a feather duster, he'll have a broomstick. Uh-huh. And after all of that, we have a...
Her father did some cruel things to her, but she learned her lesson.
After beating our butts, we would sit there. We'll have to knee in front of the shrine and pull on our ears. My dad would light an incense, which is round off. Takes about 15, 20 minutes to actually burn off. Mm-hmm. He will put the incense... And we cannot move until that whole incense burns off. Mm-hmm. That was our punishment. After we get our butt whooped... We had to kneel down in front of the shrine for about 20 minutes. And then after that, then he'll just sit there and be like, do you know why I beat you? Did you know why you just got hit? Did you know what you did wrong? He basically make us realize what we did wrong. And at that time, I mean, like, you know, no kids like to be beaten. Nobody likes mm-hmm. to be beaten. But we learned our lesson and we knew what we did wrong. You don't necessarily have to beat the living shit out of them. To teach them a lesson, mm-hmm. just introduce a little bit of fear, and that'll go a long, long way.
Yang had wonderful memories and bad ones. She is the daughter who, like, will work hard, and she would do anything to enjoy her everything. Child.
But, I mean, at that time, education was mm-hmm. more innocent. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, everybody knows Santa's fake. Back then, you didn't. You had to discover it yourself. I pulled on Santa Claus's beard, and I freaked out when I found out it was my teacher. Uh-huh. That was not cool.
You remember all these memorable memories in her childhood. She would try to find a way to be entertained.
California was fun. I mean, we kids got to do whatever it was, you know, whatever we wanted. We were outside playing dodgeball with freaking old basketball we found. Mm-hmm. Okay, we were playing till the sun came down. We had a gated area and a large play area. Here in Philadelphia, we don't have a front yard. We don't have a backyard. We have sidewalks. We have the streets. And it's just not a safe environment for us to play in. life here, it was difficult. I mean, like,
she will have to adapt to the new environment, and she will have to fit in with everyone else. She will have to be cautious around Philadelphia because it's dangerous, and she misses California.
And with that, you know, being the new Asian kid that you know, from California that loves bell bottoms, I was bullied a lot. Mm-hmm. I was actually bullied by one of the kids that had a special need. He wanted to bully me, and I, in return, tried to kick his ass. I ran after him, and I threatened to bash his head in because it was like, you know, after months and months and months of taking his bully, mm-hmm. I finally had enough of it from that day on. After I showed him that I wasn't scared, he didn't bully me anymore.
Then she faced another obstacle.
Cambodian girls, them on the other hand, they're always like, you know, they want to mess with me because I was a chunky new Asian kid that has bell bottoms. So, you know, it was definitely a lot harder. Something completely different from what I'm... But in the end, it's a lot better now. The only thing is, all I have is... I mean, like, they're just looking for attention. Back then, the educational system was pretty stupid, okay? It was just kind of like, you get it, especially in South Philly, when you went to Barrett, okay? I went to Barrett Middle School. Barrett Middle School was one of the worst fucking school in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. I went to Barrett Middle School, and in that school, it's more like, don't get pregnant, don't get killed, graduate, and you're good. Uh-huh. That's all they cared about.
She grew up and no one held her hands with her education. Her parents cared about the passing grades, but other than that, she kind of struggles with school back then.
My mom, when we first moved to Philly, the only English she knew how to say was thank you. Mm-hmm. My dad didn't know any English. Mm-hmm. I was the first kid, you know, I was the oldest kid, so everything was kind of like, you know, test and trial through me. Middle school didn't guide me through anything. In California, in order for my mom to survive, my mom was so enclosed at home 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just to keep an eye on me and my brothers. My dad was a construction worker. Mm-hmm. And on the weekends, we have a boat. My mom and dad, being, you know, from the fisherman family back in, you know, China, Vietnam, they would take the boat and they make their own net. They would catch about 700 pounds worth of fish to bring it home. Over the weekend, they'll sell it for $1, $1.50, $2 a pound. They heard about the opportunity here in Philadelphia, especially after my uncle already opened up a couple of stores here. So they came down here and we started having our own business.
Being the oldest one is not easy.
I hate it so bad because my mom depended on me for everything. 5 o'clock in the morning, she'll go, Ying, wake up. You know, we're going to go get supplies for the store. It's 5 a.m. Like a typical kid, you know, you're going to sit there and whine and cry and everything, and your mom's going to threaten to hit you. Mm. My mom was like the neighborhood alarm clock. Her voice was so loud, she'd wake up everybody. Struggles living in Philadelphia. When we were younger, it was, you know, scared people were going to rob us because we had a store. Actually, we did have a couple of people try to rob us, and my dad actually did end up getting shot at. My dad got shot. A bullet entered in through his shoulder and ended up very, very close to his spine. But other than that, I mean, we still kept to our value, you know? We still kept to our value during holidays and all that stuff. Our whole family everybody would get together, and it would be like eight minivans of Asian people mm-hmm. driving to a destination to have fun. Mm-hmm. If I could change something about my past, it'll be all the dumb shit. Some dumb lies that I told as a teenager. But, you know, if it wasn't because of those teenage dumb years, you would never grow into who you are today. So,
her relationships with her mother may get better.
Me and my mom, we were snapping at each other's throat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Oh, my God. My mom was like, can I just call the cops and send you away? It was that bad. And, you know, like, I mean, as I got older, I understood why I talked to my mom the way I did. It's because, you know, at that time, it's kind of like I grew into my own mindset. I had my own way of thinking. It wasn't old school thinking like how they had it. And we just couldn't see eye to eye. I mean, it happens even to this day. So, I mean, with them moving here, running their business and everything, they depended a lot on me. But after a while, they started picking up English and they were able to handle, you know, most simple stuff by themselves. And that wasn't an issue. Anything that has to do with paperwork, I was forced to grow up a lot sooner mm-hmm. because I was the oldest kid and I was Asian. You know, being born into an Asian family as an oldest child, all the burden's on you.
Her struggles were out of control. She had to help her parents and her three younger brothers.
It was hard as hell.
On top of that, she is getting older, which means that she is trying hard enough not to cause any problem.
It also forced me to grow up a lot sooner than I wanted to, but it was a good thing. There are a lot of things out there that I understand now, and a lot of people are just kind of like completely still clueless about it.
In the end, Ying is a young woman who is strong in the inside and out because she had faced so many things when she was younger. Ying will always remember all memories. Following up is Robbie's interview with his best friend, Armin. He struggled with fitting in with the life as an American. His friend moved to America in 2010.
Hey, I'm Robbie, and today I'm gonna interview my friend. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Okay. Hey, my name is Mohammed Arman, and I have been living in America since 2010. I'm originally from Bangladesh, and now I'm a senior at George Washington Carver Engineering and Science High School.
Okay, so today I'm gonna ask something about your personal life. So first, tell me, like, what kind of difficulties you had by growing up in USA? Because it's, you know, it's different from you, our country. So what kind of difficulties you had?
That's a lot of difficulties I have faced in my life. I mean, it's been only 3 years, but in these 3 years, I have faced, like, the most environment are so different than our in Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. And also the religion is the most effective one. First when I came in the US in 2010, I couldn't speak English, and then I couldn't interact with people, and also I was distracted in behavior, and also I couldn't compare myself with their culture, you know? So
you're saying, like, you had difficulties, like, interacting with people because you didn't know how to speak?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the same kind of difficulties too, but, yeah. So when you feel like, oh, you're okay, you know, interacting with people, when did you feel like, yeah, now I can interact with people without, you know, fearing that people are gonna, you know, make fun of me or, you know?
Yeah, I think like this kind of courage, like I have gained from my friends. Mm-hmm. Like first of all, like for first 2 weeks, I have introduced with some other friends in Philly. They're also from Bangladesh, and also they can speak English. And then like I started first speaking with them in Bangla, and then like I started in talking to them in English, and then again I begin to talk to the Americans in English, and then that's how I learned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, sports, right?
Yeah, sure.
Because that's how we met, because we used to play cricket.
Yeah.
And that's how we first saw each other, and now we're best friends.
Yeah.
So, your next question.
Sure.
So, tell me something. Oh, never mind. Did you ever get bullied before in school?
I did, yeah. At first, not in school, in my uncle's store. Like, I used to go there, like, for fun, but I didn't understand what the customer is saying. So, like, the customer, most of them are black people. So, like, I was becoming more like, I feel like they're so dangerous. I don't know why, because they look dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, they used to ask me, like, a lot of questions, and also they use some rude words.
Mm-hmm.
Now I understand what the rude word mean, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, but I couldn't reply them. So they were like, started bullying at me. And like, why are you here? Like, you should have, like, responsible for the store, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of bullying I have for the first time. And then when I went to University City High School, my first school, so I saw, like, 98% were from black people, so like I get more scared, like, in front of them, and they didn't even interact with me. And also, like, they started touching my hair and stuff, because it looks cool. And also, like, they also become rude. Like, everybody was rude to me, actually, because I couldn't speak to them. And I was also, like, I think this is the first and most interesting thing. Like, in my previous school, I had a lot of Bengali friends. So, like, they helped me a lot to get rid of this scarcity. So, like, and then that's how I get bullied a lot.
Yeah. That's kind of similar to me.
Right now, I don't get bullied because I know how to speak English right now.
Yeah, you can talk back to people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so your first school was University City High School, and you moved to Carver High School. Yeah. When?
It was this year, actually. I mean, last year.
Last year?
As my senior year, yeah.
Oh, okay. So, did you get accepted to your college or anything?
Yeah, of course. I got accepted to Penn State University, and then University of Science, and University of New Haven. And
so, which college are you trying to go to?
And also another one, actually. Canisius College from Buffalo, New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, which college are you trying to go to? Like, did you make your mind yet?
I mean, no, I haven't decided yet, but I wish to go to other out of state because I want to be independent.
Okay.
And maybe New Haven or Buffalo.
Buffalo?
Yeah.
That's good, man.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like you getting onto people's business when, like, they're having their own conversation or something?
Yeah, I did, actually. Like, especially with my close friends,
mm-hmm.
like, when they're, like, quarreling with each other with some specific problems. And then, actually, I try to solve them. Like, I try to give them, like, suggestions.
But they don't really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's right. And they talk, like, mind your own business, and this is not your work, you know?
That hurts more because they're your best friends, and if they talk to you like that.
Yeah, they did. It was the first time in my job. I used to work at 7-Eleven for Second & Wallet.
Okay.
So, like, the fourth day of my work, like, I mean, I don't know how to use the lottery stuff because it's so difficult, you know?
Yeah.
So it takes time to learn.
Uh-huh.
So then, like, the line was so big and the customers were insulting me. Because, like, I don't know how to operate the computer and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first time I think I had faced my insult, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me something about your religion.
Religion? My religion is Islam. I mean, I'm a Muslim.
Okay.
So, like, in my opinion, Islam is the best religion in life, you know?
Yeah.
So, and then we believe in one God, you know,
Allah.
So, like, we also live according to our Quran, which is our Holy Quran, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then also we have...
What's going to happen after death, this kind of things?
Yeah, I believe in after death.
After death?
Because our Quran says that, like, you know, what's going to happen after death. And, like, we're going to face a lot of problems if we do some misdeed things in our life in the earth. And then, like, if you do good jobs and good works, like, you're going to get, like, good results in after that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I strongly believe in it. Yeah.
Okay. That's good. So what's your expectation in life?
I'm actually a plant person because I know what's gonna happen in my life, but I know where to go, and my plan starts from here. I mean, as a senior,
mm-hmm.
so, like, first I wanna get a good education,
okay.
I want to be a cardiologist, and this is kind of more like difficult. First of all, I want to be a doctor, then I want to specialize in cardiologist because I love heart, you know?
Right, you love heart.
And so, like, from here, I just want to go to a good undergrad school,
mm-hmm.
and then I want to get good grades and stuff, and then get into med school. And also, I want to serve for people and get them cured when they're suffering from diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think I want to get back to my country and
okay.
help the poor people there. like yeah, serving them with the diagnosing and stuff. Also, like free foods and medications and everything, you know?
Yeah, like Asian countries like India, Bangladesh, Pakistan, they're really suffering from for food,
yes. And also for medicines, actually. Medicines, they don't have like good supplies of medicine, also the treatments.
So that's a good thing.
So I want to learn the modern treatments from here and apply it to the poor countries like third generation countries like us, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So what's your opinion relationship?
So in relationship, my opinion. Oh, that's kind of silly question. Okay, but good though.
Yeah.
Actually, I believe in relationship. Because, like, in my life, I have changed so far, like, 3 girlfriends. So,
I know, because I'm your best friend. Yeah, I know, like, I know, the girls you had, that wasn't good enough for
good
you.
Good enough, yeah. But right now, I think in this position, I am facing the, I think I have got my perfect life partner. Yeah, so, like, I think I'll just... I believe in relationship and also like marriage. I love marriage and stuff, you know.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
I'll make sure to tell your parents this.
No. All right, now.
Okay. Thank you, Armand.
You're welcome. I really like your questions. All
right. Thank you.
Overall, we learned that all people struggle in different ways. Even past and present things changed. In the end, some of them still have problems, but others no longer suffer.